Thank you for joining us for part two of our interview with authors J. Scott Savage and James Dashner.
I finished that book, and it's been a long time. Well, maybe not, you know, a long, long time. But, well, it's been long since you put out a book. But, you know, and the last book that you put out made me mad the way it ended.
You had to close the book.
Listen, it's okay to admit that you like my book better than Jeff's. That's fine.
Well, it's just been a long time since I've closed a book and went, wow, that was fun.
Cool.
You know, because...
And see, that's how I felt when I finished with Far World. Mm-hmm. But I also went, okay, when's the next one coming out?
Yeah.
Well, that you know, was immediately what
my,
I said.
When I write a book... You know, I certainly don't write books. I'm not the greatest writer in the world, and I'm not ever going to write. You know, I don't write to win awards. I write to entertain my readers.
Well, there's a difference. I'd really, really like to win the Whitney Award next year.
Well, there's a difference between being a great writer and being a great storyteller.
Yeah, I think I'm a storyteller, not...
I really think that the story...
Yeah.
Like I was saying earlier, we had this whole discussion. It should have. I wish we'd been recording it while we were eating, but...
And it really would have been gross to listen to us as we're talking have, and recording.
Chomp, chomp. But there's a lot of times when you have someone who's a wonderful writer that, you know, I'll never have any spelling errors or grammatical errors, but the story they tell isn't necessarily a great story. But then you have someone who may not be the best writer per se, but the story just... That washes it all out. You don't care that they're not the most grammatically correct or, you know, and sometimes I don't want everything to be perfect that way. I want it to be the way we talk, the way, you know, every day, even though, I mean, us Americans, Americanese, we just don't speak a lot of proper English anymore. It's not like Victorian era where, you know, the of which we end sentences with prepositions all the time. Mm-hmm. That's just become the norm. So if a book has... a proposition at the end of a sentence, I'm not going to freak out. You know, if it's a natural flow of the story, it's, you know, it's how the story is told that can nix out any, you know, deficiencies you might think you have, which I didn't notice any personally.
Well, people say, you know, they always say I rip on my own writing too much, but I will say that I do feel like I'm a good storyteller.
You are.
And let me, again, I'll not make James's head any bigger. I think...
Yeah, you should see us get bigger and bigger.
It's
right?
Like that, it's like that nose, that medicine sinus commercial.
Oh, yeah.
That's the Harry Potter, the big head boy.
Cat head boy.
That's right, exactly. I think that if you go in the direction that number one is the character, okay? If you don't care about the character, even if the story is exciting, you know, you put a character you don't care about in jeopardy, and it's not as valuable. Mm-hmm. Then you go to the plot, the story itself, and then finally you go to the writing. And I think that James has always had, all the way through, as you look at all his writing, he has always, number one, had characters that you really like, okay? Mm-hmm. In the Jimmy Fincher series, you liked Jimmy, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, you cared about what happened to him.
And you liked his dad.
You did, exactly. That's right, exactly. And number two, he always had these exciting stories. I mean, there was never an easy point to stop, you know, as you went through. Now, even in the Jimmy Fincher series, James became a better and a better writer as you read through that, you know?
Well, the difference between book one and book two, and, you know, as much as I liked book one, going from book one to book two, it was, like, this huge... I don't know what happened. Did you meet the... did you meet the group between book one and book two?
Yeah, I started going to writers' conferences, writing groups, writing books. I mean, I learned a lot.
Between those two?
Yes.
It was very apparent. Yeah. And not that the first one was so horrible.
No, I agree with you, trust me, 100%.
But it's just that it was like, wow. And in another thing that I really liked in the Jimmy Fincher saga is how Jimmy matured in each book. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't anything that was like, suddenly it was like, I mean, obviously, a lot of times you say his life would never be the same or, you know, everything was changed forever. But it was... looking when you reach near the end of book three and you look back at book one and you see that growth that should be there.
Right.
And it came, it wasn't a sudden leap into maturity. It was something that happened through everything.
Right.
And it was a natural, it followed the natural course. At least that's how it felt to me.
That's what I really tried hard to show that in those books.
And that's one thing I really liked was how Jimmy matured through the saga.
Okay, now I have a question just for those people, because I know a lot of people that listen to us are writers or wanting to be writers. Do you feel like that going to the conferences like the Storymakers, where you actually have classes that, where you talk about this? I mean, where you talk about how to become a better writer and, you know, writers' conferences, is, would you say that that's necessary to
Extremely.
Be?
Extremely.
Okay.
Yep, I agree. I don't think you can take someone who doesn't have writing talent and turn them into a great writer through a writing conference. What you can do is you can have someone who's not a very good writer and make them a good writer, and you can take someone who's a good writer and really help them to become a great writer. And I think that's, you know, it's what I was saying with James's writing is he was always a good writer, okay? But as you've seen, as I've seen his writing, and I've seen, you know, his early drafts and his rough drafts and the improvements, mm-hmm. even on The Maze Runner, the difference between when he first wrote the rough draft and what it is now, you know, is he has really become a writer where I will read parts of his books and say, geez, I wish I had written that scene. That was really good, you know? So, I mean, it's
wow, look, is that a little blush on your side?
Oh, James. He's blushing over here now.
No, what a good compliment.
But you do. Do people have natural talent where they can come? Sure, absolutely. I mean, both of us, he published his first Jimmy Fincher book. I published my Cutting Edge book without the benefit of having gone to writers' conferences and things like that. But in looking back, you know, I look back at Cutting Edge, and honestly, I want to rip the first two chapters out. They're examples of everything not to do in the beginning of your book, you know.
So, you know what? That was one of the best books I've read. I loved it. It just kept moving.
Once you got past the first two chapters.
Is that the one with the jogging scene?
I don't recall that being all that bad,
What's that?
Is that the one with the jogging scene?
He's running up the trail, and then he flashes back to when he met his wife and how he joined the church. And yeah, he does meet the ladies, you know. But it's like, okay, let's see. No flashbacks, no flowery descriptions. Get to the story.
And you know what comes to my mind when I'm thinking of that book is where he's hiding in the office when he's gone, you know,
under
the snuck in, and that's the thing I remember. I love that scene.
Yeah. Until you pointed it out to me, I never would have really thought that with your book, just because the rest of the subject matter of the book is what interested me, the technological part of it.
It had a good story,
so I got
that's
through
what saved it.
You know, but ever since you have pointed that out, it's something I notice everywhere now. The importance of the hook in the first page is, you know, I can I pick up a book, and that's the first thing I look for is, where's their hook? And where are they going to get me? Yeah.
I won't tell you what book, but just recently I picked up a brand new published, you know, LDS fiction, very well-selling book, you know. I won't go into any more detail than that. And I looked at the first page, and it's like when I teach the writing class, I always talk, you know, with Sally, you know, stood on the cliff overlooking the ocean, feeling the salty air blow back her hair as she smelled, you know, whatever. She remembered the first time she came here, and it was like, okay, that's the freaking beginning of this book, you know. Girl,
and we're not going to try to guess who this is, even though we probably could.
And it was not the first book published by this author. So I'm like, God, you should know better.
But there's some people who
we just offended
are,
someone.
I guess we're just
yes, we did.
You know, I guess we're just there are. You know, I was used to be one of those ignorant readers that didn't really. You know, I usually give a book at least 50 pages. If I can't, there's been some that I've hit 50 pages, and I'm like, if something has not happened in 50 pages, for crying out loud, then I don't know if I can finish the book.
With Inkheart, you have to get into the 16 chapter 16, and then it takes off. If you read Inkheart.
And let me tell you something about Inkheart, okay? My son, who's 10 and has read, I mean, he's read a ton, and he reads at a much higher level, and you know, mm-hmm. I mean, he's read cruised through all of James' books. He's read all the Harry Potter books. Mm-hmm. He's read, you know, all the Star Wars books. I mean, he reads a lot. He has not read. We have both the Inkheart and what's the second
Inkspell.
One?
Inkspell.
Inkspell. He hasn't read either one of those.
And Inkspell
okay?
is fabulous.
And I will tell
Inkspell.
You, there's a good story there. But again, a 10-year-old reader, if you make me get to this, you know,
The 16th chapter.
James, one of James's, I'll tell you, and this is a story I thought about a lot that he tells when I was writing Far World. And I said, okay, I'm not writing for adults anymore. I'm writing for kids. And his story is that.
Is this James's story?
James's, yeah, the first book in the Jimmy Fincher book. And I'll paraphrase here, but he says that this kid came up to him and said, you know, I really like the Jimmy Fincher book. The first chapter was kind of boring, but then again, you know, and he's like, wait, in the first chapter, the kid sees this woman, you know, kidnapped through a doorway. He, you know, he falls out of a tree. All these incredible things happen. And the kid goes, yeah, that was kind of boring, but then it got good, you know?
Kids always.
That's just with kids,
right,
they really, really need that hook in the beginning.
You do.
Well, and I imagine that Inkheart and Inkspell are probably fairly thick books.
They are.
And they're one of those maybe that have a lot. One of those that you would know you would need to read into
it.
In the
first 15 chapters.
Where this book that I'm talking about that couldn't get me in 50 pages three times I attempted to read it.
I think I know which book you're talking about.
Was paperback, small, you know, not as thick as this advanced reader copy of Far World.
Right.
And, you know, in a book that's maybe 250 pages long, you've got to get me by page 50. Not on the air.
Oh. We can't give out those secrets and
you know,
people.
And I'm sure there are people who really like the book, but I'm sorry, I had so many books to read and I could not. I tried three times to read this book and could never get past page 50. Hmm. It was so, like the first part was very good. You know, I mean the first, either the first chapter, the preface or whatever was just intense. It really grabbed me. And then 50 pages goes by and I'm still sitting there waiting. And so that was my only, maybe it got really good after that, but if you don't have me by page 50 in a 250-page book, that's, what, a fifth of the way through the book? Something better be happening, and I mean really happening by page 50.
See, this is a gripe of mine, and I'll go ahead just because I can
go
say
ahead, gripe.
Ha 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 to everyone who argues with me on this, okay? But one of my big gripes with prologues, not that prologues aren't good, and I like prologues and everything else, but a lot of writers use a prologue because they go, well, you know, the first 30 or 50 pages of my book is kind of slow. It's all set up. So I'm going to have this really, really exciting prologue to make up for it. And it doesn't work that way. Yes, the prologue is the hook, but the fact of the matter is it doesn't work. That's lazy writing.
It is because you expect someone to downshift really fast. Like you get them all excited and then...
My second book... We actually changed it that it does have a prologue.
Uh-oh.
But it's only, I think it's not even a full page.
See, that's different.
And that, it actually works. I know
that's
what you're talking about there,
an
and I really like that. It's a setup. It's something
teaser.
Entirely different. And it's not, if you took the prologue out of your book, your first chapter is still exciting. It still totally works. And that's, again, a big gripe that I have is people stick a prologue in because the beginning is boring. And, you know, and I don't like that.
Yeah. I agree.
Thank you for all the compliments. My head is very big now, so I appreciate
good.
It.
Well, you know, they're well deserving. And I really liked Mothball and Rutger, even though I wasn't quite sure how to take them at first.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, the illustrations inside, that's one of the funniest ones to me is when I saw that. And because I was like, what are they doing? I wish I could find the page so I could look at it. But is there really such a place as Macadamia, Alaska?
No, but there really is a Deer Park, Washington.
Okay.
In fact, I went there on my author tour. It was really cool.
Really?
Yeah.
And had you visited it prior?
I had not. My cousin is from there, and she told me what it looked like.
No, this I like the slightly whimsical aspect to the drawings.
Yeah, the artist,
the cabin.
He's really good. Really good.
I really did like Edgar. I wished Lorena could be in it more. I can't wait to read book two to see how she plays into it. You know, Master George was okay. Like, I like him well enough. He's kind of funny. I wish his scalp wasn't so flaky.
Oh.
It makes me want to itch my head.
Yeah.
But I guess we all have to have our...
Yes.
Our things. Wow, with Annika?
Oh.
Annika? Whatever.
Okay. Don't.
No, I'm not going into any details, but wow.
Here she's going again. Nope.
And
that's the chapter.
And that scene was right out of Wizard of Oz.
You know, I never consciously thought of that, but so many people have said that, and it's totally true.
Yeah, it's not so. I mean, it's much more. It's much more in it. You know, it's much more fitting.
Yeah.
And
okay, I don't
know. Lemon Castle. No. Is that what she calls it? Lemon Castle or Lemon Palace?
Lemon Fortress.
Lemon Fortress.
Yeah.
Okay, and that woman, I liked how Norbert handled her. I wasn't sure because he's just some, you know, 20-some-odd-year postal worker in Macadamia, Alaska, and he just knew. Of course, any woman dressed all in yellow from head to toe with no hair, something's not right with that.
Yeah.
Mistress Jane. Yeah, but she is something else herself.
Oh, I wish you guys could read book two right now.
I wish I could too.
That would be really good.
Well, I read it.
That's not fair. You guys keep doing
like
this.
Like I said, what's a girl got to do?
Well, we give each other a lot of feedback. I mean, it's good to be able to come back and say, I think this worked. I think this didn't work. And
I just wanted to sum up with the way the 12 clues were done.
Uh-huh.
I thought they were well done.
Thank you.
I'm glad that you went right into the 12th clue with what had to be in his pockets. Or was that the 10th clue?
I
think
remember.
That was the 10th clue. Anyway.
I just wrote the book. I know,
I'm sorry.
It's been a year and a half. Ago. He's
anyway,
written two other books.
I didn't get that, but the kids are all like, oh, yes, of course. You know, and I was all, oh, duh.
I'm actually
dumb grown up.
I'm actually glad you didn't
get it
because I thought it was too easy, so it makes me feel better.
Well, and the answer came really quickly after, but I was like, uh-huh. But the, you know, the magic words and how frustrated he was. And
I was frustrated by that.
But you know what? I think just the whole... But that after he did everything that the clue said to do, and you know, and his dad saw him off or whatever, and decided to, you know,
I have this thing about puzzles and clues.
I like that.
Even my book, The Maze Runner, which I rewrote. I didn't even mean to, but I figured out there's now a major plot element that has to do with a code.
Oh really? Well, I stink at codes.
I tried can't to get away from them.
I tried to do
wait. I have to feel more dumb while I'm reading.
I tried to do the ones that Rob did with the counterfeit, and I just ended up feeling really stupid.
Yeah.
Because one, I almost got. I was close, but I didn't think to go to satellite view.
Oh.
Doesn't everyone think of satellite view right away? I mean.
Anyway, so I was felt really dumb with that. But what I was going to say was I liked how. He had to figure these out, and these things were sent to him, and they were obvious yet, but not obvious. You know, you really had to, you know, I really relate to Tick because he loves science and learning, and I love science and learning, and he's not necessarily a nerd, but he got picked on and bullied, and right. I wasn't necessarily a nerd, but got picked on and bullied, and, and I think too deeply about things sometimes, and he was thinking too deeply about things and looking a little too hard. Well, that's, you know, there were so many times it was right in front of my face, but I would just, you know, delved way too deep that it was right back there.
Yeah.
So I really related to Tick, and I think that's why I liked him so much. And anyway, I thought that the clues are well done, especially because I related to him so much and his frustration of not being able to get it when everyone else who, you know, technically was probably smarter than was getting it, and he wasn't. And and that I really related to that. So
cool.
Anyway,
well,
I think
you.
That's good for 13th Reality since I'd finished that one and you hadn't, and I have not finished Far World, and you have.
Away.
So
I'm not too far from
but
finishing.
I think Sheila can take over the Far World discussion now since she knows a little bit more about that book than I do.
You know, it was funny because as I was getting ready to interview, I was one of the last ones, and I didn't realize it was like the last week. So it's like I really had to be creative when it came to thinking of some different questions, and if anyone has read my Q&A that I did with him, I've got to think of something different to ask him. But, you know, when you came up with this whole idea for Far World, did you, like, map out each of the different elementals right off the bat? I mean, or did you first think of the water elementals and then start thinking of the land elementals? And, I mean, how did you do that?
It's funny. When I first wrote Waterkeep, which is the first book in the Far World series, I kind of jumped in, you know, let's just kind of go and see where it's going to go and what's going to happen and everything like that. But as I started to get into the story, it requires you to suddenly start piecing everything together. So it's like, okay, suddenly, you know, how does magic work? Why does it work? They're going to have to find this elemental. But people, they take a look at it. And I think one of the things you're taking a look at is you're saying, well, okay, you know, there's this, 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 and this. There's a lot more depth to it, though. You start to come back and you start to say, why are there elementals and what role do they play and where did the elementals come from? And so there's kind of more depth to it. And so starting out, I didn't, but as I got into it, I had to fill all the pieces in. And I think there'll still be more pieces, but for me, there was a lot more to it. So
James actually has to go. So we wanted to, fine. We just wanted to thank him for coming and for the discussion here, and
yes,
I hope you had a good time, and that you won't mind coming back maybe when
and I'm very sorry I have to leave.
Back.
And I have to I have to say something before I leave.
Yes, go for it.
Because Jeff said all those nice things about me.
Yes.
He is definitely my number one mentor.
Oh.
So I just want to make sure that's made public. So
you know,
that
Sheila, awesome. There's not going to be any more room left for us in this room.
I know.
Don't get all weepy.
We'll
yeah,
no,
that's it.
No, well, it was great having you with us, James, and I hope that maybe you'll consider coming back when Hunt for Dark Infinity is released and you get settled out of the dust.
Like
and I'm going to see if there's any way sometime soon before March that I can read book two.
Well, we'll have advanced copies sometime in November.
We'll raise our hands.
Merry Christmas to me.
So did you say you're doing a blog tour with yours also?
I probably will do kind of a contest / blog tour type mm-hmm. thing in November.
Well, let us know if there's okay. anything we can participate in right. or do to help do you promote your book. Because we'll be glad to.
Okay,
thank you so much.
I really
so
appreciate
much.
It. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, no problem.
Keep Jeff here another couple hours.
I don't think
now
we have a choice
tell
in that.
The truth about James while he's gone. All the dirty laundry. Is
yes,
that
the dirty laundry, yes, will come out.
Okay, so do you have more Farwold questions?
Of course. I may switch to the other mic here.
Not using the silly mic anymore.
No, I don't want the silly mic. One question that I was thinking about when you were coming up with the character of Master Therapist. I know he's mainly in the beginning of the book. What is your eventual, what do you want to do with Master Therapist if he comes back? And this is one of the questions I asked. If anybody read my Q&A, I said, are we going to see more of Master Therapist? Because, you know, he's one of those characters I really liked.
Sure.
His intelligence and his wisdom and his guidance. And I know Marcus and Kaija need him.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
Otherwise, I'd be wandering around Farworld. Going, where do I go next?
Well,
so.
It is. I mean, that's in a lot of fantasies. And there are certain elements you follow. I've had people that say, well, you know, at the beginning of the book, it reminded me a little bit of Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter or things. And that's okay.
Did they really? And see, I did not get that whatsoever.
But see, here's the key. In any type of story where you've got a fantasy, a quest, there are basic things. You're going to have someone who in some way typically is some sort of outcast. Okay, that's
right.
fairly common.
Right.
You're going to have something that changes in their life to set them out on whatever their quest may be. And then you're going to have some sort of companions along the way. The difference is, it's like, okay, all these books may start at the same trailhead. But once you get away from that, the idea is that after a while you quit comparing because you get lost in that story. And so.
Very much so.
If you look at, in fact, it's funny, James and I, he has Master George, I have Master Therapist. We both wrote our books separately. Neither of us read each other's books when we had done that. So it's funny that we got that.
I hadn't thought about that. You're right.
Once you get done, you're like, oh, okay. You know, especially as we've been talking about it here. I wanted that basic role, that you have someone who is a source of wisdom and knowledge. But at the same time, I want it to be a twist. I don't want people to say, okay, this is Dumbledore, or this is Gandalf,
or
whatever. And so, from this role, like if you look at my two main heroes, Marcus and Kaija, one of the things that I wanted to do here was, in, for example, Harry Potter, or a lot of the books, what you do is you have a person who appears to be an outcast, but once they discover who they are, it turns out they're really a really great wizard, or they're really the best at their school, or they're the superhero with all the best powers and everything. And I didn't want that with Marcus and Kaija. I wanted them to continue to be, you know, kids with
problems.
With problems, yeah.
They,
with trials.
They both have a lot of problems.
They do, yeah, you know, and so they're a little more real, and that's the way I felt about Master Therapist. I won't give away the point, but Master Therapist doesn't win every battle.
No, he does not.
You know, he's not, he doesn't know everything. In fact, he'll go back and admit that he made mistakes, you know. In fact, I will say, just as a lead-in to book two.
Oh, yay. We get a little bit of insight into book two.
Yeah, just a little.
Getting excited here.
Master Therapist says to Kaija at one point, and Kaija and Marcus, he says that sometimes our greatest weaknesses become our greatest strengths.
I absolutely love that. I already told Jeff, as I was reading through this book, I was writing down quote after quote after quote after quote after quote. It was like, man, type them up and hang around my house. And
absolutely.
Good stuff that you came up with.
Well, I do have to admit that it was a little bit unexpected but refreshing when I, because I haven't read as far into it as, you know, I haven't finished it like Sheila has. But I got to the point where he told Kaija that he couldn't do anything for Marcus when he was initially having that, you know, when he initially, she saw what she did in the window thing and whatever.
Yeah.
And he was very upset and flustered and frustrated, and he said he couldn't do anything. And I thought, well, that's not your normal kind of, you know, and so obviously when you're saying he doesn't win every battle, you know, usually when you think of, you know, of wizards, and so in they are very powerful. They do a lot. They're not very weak. They can win all their battles.
Sure.
They can, you know, that's the, you know, fairy tale.
Exactly.
Fantasy part of it. And so I was a little bit surprised, a little caught off guard when I was like, what do you mean he can't do anything? Obviously he knows he can. I mean,
Dumbledore would solve it.
Exactly. Where's Dumbledore?
Gandalf,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But then again, even Gandalf gets beat up a little
sure,
bit.
Sure, that, so, that's true. And the thing is, you come back and you say, well, how does master therapist know that your weaknesses become your strengths? Are there maybe, you know, weaknesses in his past? Are there difficulties that, you know, he's had to overcome? And so that kind of is the, you know, direction that I was going with master therapist is that he's not always there. They're going to have different things they have to face alone. But even when he is there, he may not have all the answers. I mean, he's not, if he had all the answers, I guess he would be the person who'd be saving Far World, and he's not.
Right.
And there are times when he kind of looks at Kaija and she does certain things, you know, and he kind of mutters, you know, no magic indeed. You know, that kind of feeling, you know, where he's like, you know, I suspect we'll see more of master therapists.
Speaking of no magic and quotes that you liked, liked what he said about to Kaija about magic in the first part of the book.
Yeah. Well, he tells Kaija, he says, she's going to learn magic and he, you know, and she really wants to learn magic because she's in a world. And this is something in my interviews, as I did my blog tour, a lot of people would come back and they would say, well, you know, I was really surprised that you would have a hero with a disability, thinking of Marcus in the wheelchair. Honestly, Kaija's disability is greater than Marcus's in her world. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing
and
to consider.
And she feels it, too.
She does feel it,
and
yes,
she's
exactly.
She's felt it all of her life,
and
too.
That's so hard for her. Because in our world, think basically of anything that you would consider technology, from a screwdriver to a television to an oven, a car, all these different things. Now imagine that you couldn't use any technology at all. In Far World, magic is the technology.
That's our everyday life.
It is. Someone said to me, well, I understand there's magic, but why wouldn't they have like stoves or things? Why would they still cook over a fire? Well, why do you need a stove when you can tell your fire how to cook and where to cook and what to do and how to set it up? You don't need that. So here she is without this technology that she has. So she goes into master therapist and she incredibly very much wants to learn this magic. After, you know, some things have happened and master therapist says, he promises her that she does have magic. And he says, the most powerful magic is what's inside you, who you are, what you do, and most importantly of all, what you may become.
I really liked that.
I do too. I like if there's good. A theme to the whole book, it's that the most powerful magic is not, you know, the spells and the abracadabra and, you know, writing on a broomstick or whatever, you know, it's what's inside you. That's ultimately the most powerful magic.
Finding the magic within. That's why I love your blog. That's what the name of his blog. You know, another thing I was wondering about, are you going to give more of a backstory, more? Because I loved when he was explaining how he had saved Marcus, you know, as a baby and explaining all that. And one of my other questions was, are we going to find out about Kaija's parents? And you said, what was your short answer to me? It was like...
Probably something like, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you right now. Let me
yeah,
do
I mean, it was very short.
Yeah, it was. That's right.
Okay, that was a good answer. Now, next question.
Yeah, there is... I guess what I wanted to do in Far World is, in the entire series, I want it to be what you might view as an epic YA fantasy. If you look at The Wheel of Time, for example, Robert Jordan,
oh, yes,
okay,
yes.
It's very deep and very drawn out and, you know, to the point where you have to go back and read all the books to figure out where you're at. I'm not looking for that. But what I am looking for is there's a lot more to this than just a story. I love the Fablehaven series.
Yes, okay? I do too.
But I really love how we've started to add some things. You know, you read the first book and it's like, okay, that was a fun story. Uh-huh. These kids went to a magical place and, you know, these things happened, but the story is done. Well, then it's like, okay, now there's a bad group over here and a good group over here. But this person that's supposed to be part of the good group, is that maybe really part of the, you know,
part of the
all these
group.
Different things. Yeah, there's all these different, in Far World, there is a lot more we're going to learn. Now, in the first book, you know, some people felt like it went a little bit too quick, that there wasn't enough backstory put in. But I felt like in the first book, number one, you're on the run, okay? They are constantly
from yes.
when they first
they
get together
stop.
To the very end of the book, yeah. So there's not a lot of point to catch your breath. Now, as we go into the other books, there will be points where you get that. And there's a lot more. You know, who is the Dark Circle? You get a brief mention that
good.
These guys have been around for
good.
A long time, you know, that 1,000 years ago there was this fire in the forest, you know? What are they trying to accomplish? Kaija's parents, Marcus's parents.
Yay.
You know, just even things that I think people may take for granted. You know, there are four elementals, water, fire, air, and land. Why are they there? Where did they come from? What is their role? When we learn that there is a relationship between Far World and Earth, what is that relationship? And I tried to throw enough little clues out there that people kind of read it and go, huh. You know, there's a scene where Marcus is in the Westland Woods.
Yes.
And he's recovering, and he has a dream briefly that he's playing a Far World game with a person who was kind of his mentor on Earth, you know? And then he wakes up and he's like, wait, I kind of know this game. So just little things where hopefully, you know, the readers will get a clue that, okay, maybe there's more to this than I'm aware of.
That's good. I really want to have more of the background information.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, you know, and I don't necessarily like long, you know, page after page right. of details, but just it's kind of explaining, who, like you're saying, who this is and where they came from and why they're doing what they're doing, the motivation behind what the Dark Circle is doing.
And when you were talking about... you've got action, you've got things you need to do, you're telling the story, and then you'll get to a place in book two and even book three and, you know, where more of the history can be revealed.
Right. Yep.
Well, that kind of reminded me of The Lord of the Rings. I know we already talked about that with the movie, but the first thing that came to mind was Gollum's backstory that didn't even appear in the movies until the third installment.
Right.
Kind of got hints of things. They kind of talked about it. Yep. Gandalf explained, you know, just a little bit when they were going through the Mines of Moria and everything.
Yep.
There were little things, but you didn't have time then to go into Gollum's history.
Right.
However,
right.
you got to a point where you could go a little yep. bit. And that, it was kind of like that with different things. For example, when Gandalf was researching the ring
right.
in the first movie, you know, if you tell all the history, like you were saying, that's a lot to take in all at first. I think that's a good trick or whatever you
yep.
would use as an author
yep.
to drop some things and then get to a point where you can reveal a little bit, but you don't
right.
ever reveal everything all at once.
But you have set it up. And this
right.
is when I read, you know.
And so it fits into the story and you don't feel like you're being dragged through
exactly.
a history lesson.
It doesn't, and it
Which
also
I
doesn't feel like they
tired.
Threw it in at the end. As I looked at Harry Potter, there were some things where I felt like, okay, this was set up very well and I really liked the way she built up to it. There were other things that maybe it was just to me as an author, but when I read them, it felt like, you didn't know that from the beginning. You just kind of added that
exactly.
and made that
exactly.
up.
And that's one of my problems with the book I just read recently. It was like, you know, even though yep. someone claims that they were going to write this the whole time, it's like I didn't agree with that. You can tell
yep.
when it's something they've just added all of a sudden.
Yep.
It wasn't the original idea.
But if the clues are dropped and then
right.
you kind of fill that in and you're like, oh, that's what
then
they were referring to,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I think that's when you can allow a little bit more detail to come in without disrupting the telling of the story.
Well, you've won your audience over,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Exactly.
Your first book, you've got to get the reader to come back and say, and that's why, you know,
if they want to know the history,
right,
then they're
right.
going to want to have it in that next book.
Exactly. Sheila and I talked a little bit about this, that I said, I am comfortable with getting 4 stars on this first book, okay?
Mm-hmm.
3 stars, and I'm a little disappointed, but I can even live with that. What I want is someone to say, this book was good enough that I like the characters and I want to read on.
Exactly.
Because that's what I needed to win. If I can win you over enough in book one that you're willing to trust me into book two, now I can start to expand. Now I can start to play with it and take a little more time. I will tell you that one of my favorite characters in this book is a character that is not alive. When we start the book, we only learn about him in the history, and that's Tankum. That's the warrior who, there's actually a whole history of Tankum and Master Therapus going back as youth. In fact, I've thought, you know, if this ever really took off and did well, I'd love to do a series called The Wizard and the Warrior and follow Master Therapus and Tankum as they were, you know, growing up together and
mm-hmm.
their different things.
Sheila's really interested in that.
I know. She and my wife Jen over there, they're getting notes and stuff going back and forth.
She's giving me a little insight into what's going to be something that was at the very beginning of Waterkeep that's going to be key into book two.
Just because you were talking about dropping clues into things, I
sure.
showed her a particular clue.
And it's a clue that I love. It's
that
a great.
Is going to,
great.
I didn't tell her how
no,
I was going to play a part. I just said.
She's keeping your secrets.
Did you want to
she's
share this or is this,
no,
her,
this is the,
off the air?
Is this an off the air?
This is fine. You can edit it
is
out
it?
If it gives away too much. But
you can tell us.
When Kaija first goes into Master Therapist's mm-hmm. room.
And he's a wolf.
And he's a wolf.
Yes.
Is that the clue?
And then he changes back into a human. And there's a little sentence in there that says, Kaija admires the transformation because...
Not everyone can do it or hold it.
Exactly. There are very few wizards that have the ability to turn into an animal, much less hold that form.
I love that concept. That whole idea, I absolutely love.
I really didn't mean to talk with my mouth full, but...
That's okay.
I was just excited to be catching on to where she was going.
But see, and that's what you want, at least in my mind, what I enjoy, is a clue that if I never did anything more with that, it would just feel like it was basically backstory, okay? It would just It would feel like it was what you call implied history, okay? But at the same time, when you get more about that, which, like she said, in this case you will, It doesn't feel forced. You're like, oh, yeah,
natural
I remember
course,
when.
Natural.
Exactly, yeah.
That is fabulous. Yeah. And, of course, Jeff is going to use one of my ideas in one of his books.
Yes.
We talked about this.
That's right.
We were just joking how, he needs to take him somewhere exciting when they jumped from world to world. Next time he jumps to Earth, to take him to Disneyland.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Have all of the Dark Circle following him up in, Splash Mountain or something. I think that'd just be great, What fun they could have in Disneyland with the bad guys chasing
him. Who knew that Disneyland was actually Firekeep,
Exactly. You know,
that would be, when you can throw stuff like that in sometimes, which I know, some authors have done.
Yep.
If it's done well.
Yep.
It's really good.
Well, it can be kind of fun.
I like to, there are some authors.
I don't know if it'd fit in Farworld, but.
Maybe not in that one.
Oh, come on.
We could have, Chandra go solve a mystery at Disneyland.
There you go.
But I do like, some people avoid comments that might date their book later on, okay?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's very key. Sometimes.
I don't worry too much about that because, honestly, we date ourselves all the time, even by writing style. If you go back, you talked about the Kingdom and the Crown. Is that
the Hero and the Crown?
The Hero and the Crown.
Right.
Okay, you go back and you read that. Right, and the style of writing. In fact, the style of the font of the book itself is dated. That's an 80s.
Yes.
So there are things. So I don't worry about that. So someone said, in your book, when Kaija first tells him about magic, and he goes, Harry Potter,
letters and you fly
on brooms and everything. Well, could that date it further on? It could. But realistically, believably, if a kid in our world right now, a 13-year-old boy, suddenly discovered that there was magic spells and everything like that.
He's going to think of Harry Potter.
That's the first thing he'll think of.
Exactly.
So that's why it was good to put
and
that
who's
in.
And who's to say Harry Potter isn't going to still be 20 years down the road?
20, 40, 60, I'm sure.
Our kids, their kids, their kids even. Who knows?
But it's okay. I like that. I think that gives your book a place and a feel,
Now, if you were describing the size of the cell phone that somebody carried, that might be different.
But see, even
or then, with Dorothy Kennington describing Jayhawk's pink button-down shirt and his burgundy.
That's so lovely.
That dates a book.
Think about the cell phone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If I had written a book 15 years ago, he would not have pulled the cell phone out of his shirt pocket. He wouldn't have, okay? It would have been a brick or it would have plugged into his,
It would have been a car phone.
Right.
Or something.
And the author wouldn't have known they were dating themselves. That's right. Exactly. So
I think
that's
it's
why I say,
okay.
Yeah.
I think it's fine.
You're going to.
Well, Harry Potter is literature. It's like, just because we mentioned Lord of the Rings, that doesn't date us. Even the Lord of the Rings was written, in the 1940s?
Exactly.
Well, or think about all the Narnia series, too.
Exactly.
I mean,
yeah.
It was written a long time ago.
Yep.
So. Exactly.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No.
All right. Any more questions?
I think with literature, you can get away with naming literature. So.
I think you can.
No. Do you have any other questions?
I'm still thinking over here.
What should we do with the last drawing?
Let's do the last drawing while I'm thinking of another question.
And then after that, I think I want to ask Jennifer a couple questions.
Let's do. I would love to have some questions. I thought about that.
James left and left a vacant spot, and so we convinced Jeff's wife, Jennifer, to come and join us at the table.
And I have the silly microphone.
She does. Silly.
She does.
We need to find out some more secrets about.
Can you sing? Can you sing?
Oh, no.
Okay. We won't ask you to. We can't either, but we still did one time when I first got the microphones.
It was really, really bad.
It was kind of late at night, and it was crazy.
It was this is
anyway, do you want to draw the last name for your...
Hey,
sure.
Let's see.
Why not? Yep,
the last
right.
copy of Faro.
All that rattling. That's the...
That's the all the names in the bag.
That's right. All the names in the bag. Okay. For the last advanced reader copy of Far World.
That would be a fancy custom-made bag there.
That's right. It is Claudia M.
All right. Yay, Claudia. Good job. Congratulations.
She'll be happy about that.
Good job. Absolutely. We have some great listeners who sent in their comments, and thank you, everyone, for sending in your comments. And please do it, even if there isn't a contest. If you have anything that you want us to know, any suggestions, as always, you know we welcome your feedback. But if you ever have any questions for any authors, or if you'd like us to see if we can contact one, or maybe if you have an author in mind, mind you, not Stephanie Meyer, someplace, someone who is totally unrealistic who would never come on the podcast, let us know, because we can see about getting them out if they're interested. So
absolutely.
Anyway, so thank you for everyone who submitted your comments, and congratulations to Jennifer and Claudia for winning those books.
We appreciate your comments.
Okay, so Jennifer,
what are your questions? I've got some. Do you have questions?
If you have one right on the top of your head, go ahead.
Well, I just wondered, what role do you play in your husband's writing process? Are you his listening ear? Are you his sounding board? Or are you the one to tell him? That's really dumb. Don't even put that there. Uh-huh. Tell us what you do.
He reads everything aloud to me first.
Out loud?
Out loud.
A lot of it, yep. Mm.
I am his front line editor. He bounces things off of me. In the first Chandra book, he said, okay, here's the plot. I'm going to have her go upstairs, find this dead body, and then when the police go back, the body's going to be gone. And I said, you know what would be cool? Because I read Agatha Christie. I said, you know, what would give your story more immediacy is if there was a fresh body there when the police went in.
But what she found was an old body originally.
Right. She found an old body. But his idea was that the body was going to be just gone, mm-hmm. that the police were going to think she was nuts because the body was just gone. But instead, there's a new, fresh,
so that was a great twist.
So
it really
whose
was.
Whose idea? Because I remember when you told me about this at the murder mystery dinner when I very first met you. And, you know, for like 10 minutes, all I just listening, and it was wonderful. Who cares about food? You're telling a story. Was about the footsteps in the dust going up but not coming back.
Well, so
and yet there was no way for the locked windows and all of that stuff.
And there's
whose
more
idea
to
was
this
that?
Story. There's more to this because she came back up. So we kind of played off each other. I said, okay, mm-hmm. they're going to go up and the body's going to be gone. And she said, what would be even cooler is if they went up and, like she said, there's another body that just died. And it's like, oh, okay, how about this? She goes up the stairs or they go up, you know, the fresh body's there. But the only footsteps going up and back are her footsteps and then the footsteps of the man going up, okay? Which sounds great. It's like, oh, yeah, that'll be so cool. Then for 3 months, I was totally stuck on, okay, how does this all work now? You know, how did this happen? You know?
So you really did not write anything for 3 months after
that?
No,
I didn't know where the story went.
Oh.
I mean, how do I?
Man, that's a major writer block.
I put him in a box.
You really did.
And how do you? And honestly, I'm going to have to go back and read House of Secrets again because I can't remember how that is. And I love it when I do.
I
love it when.
I totally remember.
I read a book.
It scared me to death.
But then I've read like 200 other books since then. And then I can go back and read it like it was new again.
Well, that's
what I love it when.
No, I just remember because my uncle had a farm.
Yeah.
And so I just...
So you remember how it all went?
Farm stories.
But yeah, but here's all the pieces. You're saying, okay, there's a house that no one's lived in for 20 years. All the stuff hasn't been untouched, but no
there's
one has broken into the house.
There's a soup can on the kitchen counter.
Right, yeah, there's an old soup can on the kitchen counter. Her grandmother deserved all her stuff, but no one's broken into the house. There's a dead body that's been there for 20 years, but somehow a new body has appeared there.
And that old one was
gone. And the old one's gone. And, you know, all these different pieces... And literally, you know, it's like, well, this, no, that doesn't work. Well, that, and one night, you know, it's when I'm just falling asleep, and all of a sudden I like sat up and I'm like, oh, I know how this is all going to come together. I know how this is going to work, you know, and so.
Wow. See, yeah, I'm going to have to go back and read it because I know once I get started, I think it'll come back to me.
Yeah.
But okay, so your idea was the fresh body.
Right.
And whose idea was the footsteps?
That was mine.
That was yours.
Yep.
Okay, so when he finally figured it out...
Oh, it was beautiful.
I agree. I love that
part. I read a lot of mysteries. Mm-hmm. Mysteries are
well, who else
kind of
to ask
thing.
Questions and advice from a mystery buff?
I'm his target audience.
Yep,
so.
She is. She
That's
came
great.
Up with the name Kaija.
Really?
I think it's beautiful.
Like
it is a beautiful name.
It is maybe if I have a girl.
That's cute.
I don't think
well, so. Well, and that was the fun thing is doing a name that... we found a couple other people. There was like a woman in a rock band or something. But Kaija is pretty much an unknown name. Mm-hmm. And so it's fun to do that. In fact, it reminds me of the story of in Splash. Here this mermaid comes out. And they're walking through New York, and he says, "Well, you know, you need a name because her name, you know, big glass and everything."
She sees the
street sign, and she says, "Oh, Madison."
Yep, I love that part.
Now, what people forget is everyone laughs at that point because Madison isn't a real name.
Mm-hmm. Well, now they don't really laugh now because
Madison's a really common name.
Now it's all over the place.
So maybe, you know, maybe 20 years from now, Kaija will be, you know,
all over the place. That'd be cute. Yeah, that would be. Well, I mean, there are worse names.
Sure. Yeah.
But by the time a book comes out in, you know, in published form, I've probably read it through about 20 times.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what? That is great. You are a great support for him. That's a wonderful thing to ask of. Of a spouse to read your work,
it really
20
is.
Times through,
yeah.
And
that's awesome.
But, you know, I bet you, you know, I don't think it's torture for you at all.
No, he's a good writer.
He really is a great writer.
By the end, it's like if I have to read this one more time,
that's okay.
No.
I feel the same way.
I know he does.
You know, I bet after 20 times through, though, you've got a real feel for the book, and so you can really,
you do.
You get that educated feedback.
You have to read. At some point, you have to read the book backwards, one page at a time, so that you catch all the line edits.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you find yourself just... I enjoy all
the
books.
Catch all the line edits? Maybe you can clarify that one for me.
Okay, let's say there are like typos or things like that. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that an author or editors miss typos is you get caught up in the story.
And so I noticed that.
So if you read one page at a time going backwards, it doesn't allow you to get caught in the story, and so you're reading each page fresh.
Gotcha.
So,
right.
Interesting. I'll tell you.
See, one thing I do notice is typos. I don't know why, but even when I'm caught up in a book, this typo just goes.
Oh,
okay. We hate to have one.
I'll tell you another. Go ahead.
I was going to say. One of the things that Jennifer has also done for me is fresh eyes. When I wrote Far World, I had never written YA. I had never written fantasy. And I honestly didn't believe that I could write them. This story had been coming together in my head, but I never planned to put it down on paper. And I had tried times before to write, you know, a page or, you know, in fact, I've even got a chapter of what would ultimately it's not Far World, but it's the first. It's the story of Tankum and Master Therapist going to this city where this child is going to be born. So as I started to write it, I was very unconfident of myself, of whether this was even working or not. And Jen would keep coming back, and she would go, "This is not just good. I mean, this is really great. I mean, this is absolutely going to get published." And I'm like,
"Was that good encouragement for you?"
It was necessary encouragement. Mm-hmm. It really was, because, like I said, I mean, there's a lot of times, and
you weren't just sugarcoating it either, were you?
No, he knows I don't sugarcoat things because he read something out loud to me once that was written in a real folksy kind of narrative, and. He got done reading it, and what did I say?
She said, "Oh, I think you're trying too hard." And that really ticked me off.
He was so mad.
That's good.
That's hilarious.
That's great, because you don't want to sugarcoat.
Good feedback there.
No, I need – you need someone to honestly say, "Hey, you know what? This isn't working." Or "You know what? This is really working well. Keep going with this."
So is it easier to hear criticism from Jennifer than it is from your editor?
No, it's not.
Do you have a good relationship with your editor where that's not? Or is it just that you take criticism in any way well?
Well,
I mean, does it depend on the depth of the relationship?
Okay, he brought up that whole "you're trying too hard" thing like a lot for the next year.
Yeah, no, I really like to get feedback from Jennifer, but it's more personal at that point. Okay. By the time it gets to an editor, you know that you've got a whole story. Now you're just polishing it. You've already got the stone in place. Now you're polishing it and making
it
better.
So she's done all the hard part.
Oh, yeah.
And so you know what you're going to – editor has – She's smoothed all the rough spots, or helped you smooth the rough spots.
I will
so
come back and rip pieces out.
Okay, and her cut on the book is.
She's like, "We get food on the table and a house to live in,
and a trip to someplace exciting, hopefully
to Disneyland."
Yeah, bring her to the podcast. Yes. How much more exciting can you be than that?
This is her reward for all those times of the M&M
cookies and peppermint patties.
You know, that just amazes me.
This is fun for me. I like being part of this. I like helping him. We're a good team.
We are a good team.
That's awesome. We accomplish things together. I do stuff outside of our home, and he is very supportive of what I do. So we just help each
Give
other.
Give and take.
Yeah, it really is our success. I mean, one of the questions I did get asked in a podcast actually by Josie Kilpack was, she said, you know, I know that your wife is always there and supportive of you, but at the same time, I know that she's got her own life, and I've talked to her, you know, how does that mm-hmm. work? And I said, just at least for the two of us, it's not your success versus my success or competing or whatever. It's our success. Mm-hmm. And that's,
I think you have to have that kind of give and take in a relationship, no matter what you're doing. My husband travels a lot, and yet he supports everything with doing this podcast and the technical part of it. And even though it means that he's sequestered into our room for hours, you know, of course he uses an excuse to play the PlayStation for a few hours. he never gets to play because he's always so busy.
So we're doing him a favor.
He also has the kids and has to take care of Riley and everything and get him to bed and everything. So, and he's willing to set this all up and do everything for me.
Oh,
I think
Riley,
have to
by
support.
The way, cutest kid ever.
Oh, he's adorable.
Darling, he really is. I love him.
Yeah. Oh, I love that boy. He is so good to his mommy. I mean, he has a little bit of that redhead temper because, you know, he's, even though he's lightening up a little, he still has that strawberry.
He's a fiery little guy.
He's not mad all the time. When he gets tired, sometimes he'll hit, but we tell him to be soft, and he touches soft. And
he's a cutie.
You know, he knows what he likes, but he's such a good boy to his mommy. So thank you. I think he's a good kid, but I'm his mom, so.
Yeah.
You know, but it's really necessary to have that, and I can see that that is the success for both of your endeavors.
Sure. Absolutely.
You know, it really, it surprises me hearing you say that you really didn't think you could write fantasy, because we knew just what a good writer you are from reading your Shandra books, you know.
From the first time we had you on the podcast, you very first told us about Farwell. Before you even finished
I
the
never
first
doubted
book.
At all in my mind that you would come up with a fabulous fantasy book, but also something that I knew he read a lot of fantasy and loved the genre. So that's why I knew something good would come. Mm-hmm.
Well, I will tell you, you're right. I read a lot of fantasy. In fact, it's my brother, youngest brother, who I actually dedicated the book
to. I noticed that.
You know, he encouraged me.
He writes. Doesn't your younger brother?
No, he doesn't.
We're both huge
Terry Brooks fans, and we had quite a bit of age difference between us. I think we're about 10 years apart, but we would play, you know, when computer games were first coming out, we had a routine where we would go and we'd buy this new computer game, and I'd be driving back, and he'd be, you know, reading the manual, you know, and telling me all that, you know, out loud. And so we'd get all excited. So he always said, you know, you need to write a fantasy novel. And so I started, you know, making up this story about this boy who was in a wheelchair and, you know, this girl who was in another world and these different things. But writing fantasy, number one, there's the whole writing to a young adult. We talked earlier in the podcast about middle grade versus young adult versus adult. I didn't know if I had that voice inside me to be able to write young adult literature of any kind. Mm.
Because you'd written adult so
Because
far.
I'd written adult, exactly. The second thing is that in a fantasy world, one of the toughest things to pull off is if I say to you, the detective, you know, pulled out a Glock and fired at the headlight of the car that was racing toward him. You can picture a car. Mm-hmm. You know what a Glock is. You know what the bullet, all those kind of things. If I take you into a cavern where these invisible creatures suck your will to live out of you, this is something you don't know. You've never seen it, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I have to position it in such a way that you can view it.
Yeah. But, is that something that happens in the
yeah,
book?
Yeah, it does. Okay. it's a scene from the book.
I haven't got that far yet.
I didn't
sorry.
Know if I could do it.
I didn't know whether I should say anything or not. I didn't want to hear anything happened that I hadn't read yet.
Because it's an example that you're applying to me, so I figured
exactly,
it was there.
Right, that you've got, and it doesn't give anything away. I mean, you learn fairly quickly that, but
it does invoke a little bit of terror.
Yeah, well, there's some scary parts. That may be one of the scariest.
They are very scary, and I love. And that's another thing. I absolutely love all the creatures that you come up with. And, you know, that's a big thing for me. When in some fantasy books, you read and go, you know, they're okay. Or you've heard about them before, but you were so creative in coming up with
yours. Well, the very first scene in the book, you were introduced to. That was kind of fun. But I was like, don't hurt her, you know.
Well, I got to tell you, I'll tell you two funny things. One is, going back to Sheila's comment about the creatures, what I wanted was a combination. I don't like fantasy books where you take something with four legs and a saddle that people ride and you call it some made-up name, you know. And it's like, okay, it's a horse, you know.
Exactly.
Call it a horse.
You have to make a whole new
creature. Yeah, so you've got I wanted a world where there were certain things that you're comfortable with. You know, there are certain things, and again, it will tie in. There, you'll mm-hmm. understand more. But that there are certain things that make sense. But when I'm going to do a different creature in this book, nothing against it. I mean, we read the Percy Jackson book. We were talking about that where you've got Medusas and mm-hmm. you know, all those creatures that are mythical that we know about. But what I wanted is I want you to never be totally comfortable in Far World. I want you to realize, okay, you may not get it. Right from, there's a point where you see a flower that he reaches out and touches, and it's a beautiful flower, and it spits this acid on his finger, and he's like, ah! And he sticks his finger in his mouth, and suddenly, you know, she's like, don't put your finger in your...
Because it is a different world.
Right, it is
a different world. And you want the reader to know it is, and exactly. never forget that it's a different
That's
world.
That's right. So if I create a creature that you have never seen and never heard of, and you may think, well, it's a little bit like this, or it's a little bit like mm-hmm. that, but it's not, you know, it's new enough that you don't know it.
Well, you can imagine it's like maybe a possumish type of a sure. thing, but you know it doesn't look like
right, and you that. Don't know it may, you know, in the case of the Ishkabiddle, you mm-hmm. know, these little feelers may come out and these little, you know,
and the sand thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was kind of fun.
And that going to your other thing,
and then the boo. Yeah, I was like, ah, no. Yeah. You know, because I read that first chapter actually online.
Oh yeah,
I think you had linked to it from the 6LDS Writers blog.
Yep,
and so I went and followed that, and I read it, and I was like, you know, well, I got to the end of it, and I thought, wow, this is going to be intense, because it was kind of a dark first chapter, yeah. like a little bit yeah. darker than I expected, and yeah. I was like, wow, these are really bad guys.
Yeah, and I wanted that. I think, again, I don't want to write something that I've got a son who's in second grade, okay?
Third grade.
No, he's just starting third grade on Monday, okay. So he's not in third grade yet.
Oh, and when he days. Read it,
he was a second grader.
A few more days, okay.
I do forget, but he's a second grader.
Soon to be third grader.
Soon to be third grader. I didn't want anything that he couldn't read that was going to be so
too
intense
scary.
Or scary that, yeah. But at the same time, I wanted something where the bad guys are bad guys.
And they know? Are.
Yes, they are.
They are bad.
Yeah, they really are.
To the core.
So
they're
bad. Did you help him with any of his plot ideas in Far World then?
Or Jennifer?
I don't remember. Did I?
I think we brainstormed. Or did she mean back
we brainstormed a lot yeah. of things back and forth, but fantasy is not a genre that I read a lot. Although okay. he's made me read quite a bit of it, and I actually did read the first 8 Robert Jordan books in rapid succession and then stopped because, what did I say? I said, you know, he's going to die before he finishes
oh
this
my
series.
Oh, no.
And she I felt really right. bad when he did. I thought,
I shouldn't have said that.
But, you know.
You didn't mean it bad.
No, but, I mean, there was a whole book that didn't even have Matt in it. Really, it just bugged me. But
I have no idea what she said. I hopefully will someday.
But we... Maybe. But we do. We talk and talk and talk and talk and talk.
But I will
so there
say,
wasn't anything like a major plot.
I named the Mist Steed.
She
did.
Did
you really?
I did.
Yep.
Good for
yep.
you.
And,
oh,
but
good.
This, I will tell you that this story, sometimes in like a mystery, I've got to think through and plot how am I going to do what's going to happen here. This series, I've talked about this on my blog tour, but talking about feeling like I couldn't write it. After James, who was here, and James had sold 13th Reality to Shadow Mountain. Hadn't even finished writing it yet. He'd sold it to him the first 3 chapters, and he called me. I remember when I was in the airport, and we spent about a half an hour. He was telling me how great Shadow Mountain was, what they were doing, how exciting this was. This was in my head, and I thought about this Far World story, and I thought, gosh, I wish I could write this, you know, because that would be great to get involved with Shadow Mountain, mm-hmm. but I can't. Finished my trip, and I came back home, and I went to bed after my trip, and in my head, different parts of this story kept coming together, you know, and you know, I'd hear, you know, the
making
kind of dialogue and voices.
Sleep.
Yeah, I couldn't. And I kept trying to go to sleep, and I kept saying to myself, I can't write that. I don't write fantasy. You know, the feeling was, write this story, but I don't write that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, finally, at about 2:00, I couldn't get to sleep. And so I came up with a great idea that had actually worked for me before. And I said, I'll get up, I'll try to write the first chapter of this story in my head. And once I prove to myself that I can't write it, then I can go back to sleep and at least get some sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 5 hours later at 7 in the morning, I've written 5,000 words of this story, and I'm going, Wow.
Maybe I can.
Yeah.
It took on a life of its own.
But that's the way the whole book came. Yeah. I didn't spend a lot of time saying, okay, how will I set this up? I mean, it just.
I'm so envious of that, because when you hear authors say there was just this story and it just had to come out.
Yeah.
And, you know, so ever since I was in junior high and into high school, you know, I've had friends where we would write little stories and then trade them and then write what we thought about them and, you know, different things like that. And, oh, boy, I'd hate to go back and read some of those. I'm pretty sure I threw them all away. But, you know, where it just kind of seems to bubble up and come naturally. And there have been some times when I've, you know, been driving or, you know, something where you have your mind free.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought about, like, if I wrote a story, what would it be about? You know, and I know I need to write about something I know, something that, you know, something that's real, so it feels authentic.
She'd write a romance.
I don't think so. You really don't think one of the things I thought that if I would write, it would be a suspense, but it would be about, you know, I think the closest thing I could write in reality would be, you know, something kind of along the lines of Cutting Edge, but like a wife whose husband unintentionally gets sucked into some scheme or something, and then she has to actually, you know, she leaves the kids at home and does, you know, because that's pretty much the only thing I could really say, because my husband's into technology stuff, and I wouldn't be letting him off. You know, I'd be like, I'd kick some butt if I had to, you know? I mean, I don't have a green belt for nothing. But, you know, it's just like, that's the closest thing to anything that I could ever come up with, right, that would have any kind of authenticity in it.
Yeah.
And, I would never even, I wouldn't even attempt
to do
it.
The best stories. I'd rather read a book. You know, really do are the ones, I think, where people can sit down just like you did and just let it flow, and for five hours later and have
where it's almost like you don't even have a choice. You have to write
because
it. You know?
I think you can always tell stories where people forced it. You've got to write this, and you can tell it's forced, and it's just like, oh, I mean, some of these writers that you have to have a book out every 6 months or something, and
you might be able to do it for a year or two, but then after that,
I mean, let's go back to you know, Stephanie Meyer. Twilight was the book that came for her so easily.
Yes, it did.
That it flowed. It came
It was almost
so fast.
Magic. It was almost magical.
It does.
Yeah, exactly. And it really felt magical.
Yep.
And then later on, I mean, not that she's not a very talented writer, but later on, I think it's entirely possible that, you know, well, now I've got to force it. I've got to get this. I've got to get this thing come out.
Well, even book two was, you know, even book two, as much as some people didn't like it because, you know, Edward wasn't in half of it.
No, it's all about
Jacob. That's fine, you know. The first two are good. The third was okay. I mean, you could see it building up to something. But then when The Host came out, it was like she was back to that, you know, where you were interested.
How good it was.
There were a couple things like the secret thing that was anticlimactic, that kind of just, I thought that could have been played up a little bit more. But for the most part, she was back to where she had the story and needed to tell it.
Yeah.
And so as I think she's one of those, better at one of those maybe one book authors. Because,
well,
I mean, the series were okay, but it seems like the first book that just, you know, she comes with a story and she really needs to tell it.
Yeah.
And the first book really captures you. So after the, you know, with the Twilight series and everything, is you know, it's a good story and everything. And I haven't read Breaking Dawn, so I don't know about that one. But The Host and the two that are supposed to come after it, I'm actually a little bit nervous about the two that have to come after it.
Well, I mean, let's go back to why you're writing them. I think that's the key. I had someone who said to me, well, you know, you've got this five-book series. How are you going to keep the enthusiasm or the, you know, the magic alive in that series?
But to you, it's not about doing a series, it's telling the entire story, which you can't do.
Exactly. It's
well, I'm sorry to answer for you or to finish your sentence, but I just sensed that that's where you were going.
Consider that difference between, gosh, here's the one book I wrote and I'm done, and now the publisher says, gosh, I like that book so much, can you write two more books in that world? Suddenly the magic isn't there anymore. Mm-hmm. Now it's about getting paid and meeting the deadline. And that's,
and you can still tell a decent story, but
absolutely,
you know, that magic of the first one,
something missing.
Where if she knew that she was like, oh, this is going to be a four book series, I know exactly how it's going to go.
Right.
I've seen the whole thing. I think that's where, you know, and I don't know because I haven't finished the J.K. Rowling series of Harry Potter, but did you feel that she approached it as in like a whole, because she always said that there was going to be the seven books.
No, she always knew.
Yeah. So did that carry over, or did it start to get forced after a while?
No, I think it did.
I think it totally carried over.
Yeah, it wasn't just, okay, here's an interesting story that happens in year one, and oh, here's another little story that happens in year two.
I guess I better write about year three.
It progresses, right. Yeah. It carries on, and the story, and we talked about backstory, mm-hmm. all those pieces.
There's plenty of it. It's just like six. Right. I mean, six just lays it all out on the line.
Exactly.
This is why this has happened. This is why Lord Voldemort became
And she always knew that's where she was going to be.
I think she did a brilliant job in doing that, in that seven books. It's
the
amazing.
Reason why I knew that that's where you were going with it is because in the last two times you've been here and you've spoken about Far World, you've always spoken about it as a whole.
Right.
You've never spoken about this book that you've just always
written.
You've
book.
Talked about this series that you want to write, this whole story as a whole. And so that's, you have always addressed it with us. So I,
absolutely.
You know.
It's not something that could be three books or six books. You know, it's not like, oh, this is doing so well. Let's do.
Maybe I'll add another two.
Yeah. I already know what's going to, you know.
I am making so much money. I think I want to write.
Now I'll do it from, you know. The you know what happened 10 years before and see it from someone else's view. You know,
and not to jump too far ahead because I know your first book isn't even out yet.
Yeah.
You know, I'm wondering where we're going to be in 6 years.
I'm wondering that myself.
We're going to be begging him to please come back and talk to us because he's such a huge writer.
I hope we're not going to be so teensy weensy as we are now. If we're still doing this in 6 years, which I don't see an end, but I mean it would be.
Think how weird that is, though. That here I've got this book coming out, and I do know that in 4 years that I'll be looking forward to the, you know, I mean, how many times in your life do you know what you're going
to
be doing in 4 years?
Never.
No.
And so that's a little freaky too.
Well, and I know since you've pretty much know where this story is going to go, you cannot tell me that you haven't thought of something other than this or your horror novel that you kind of thought of another thing maybe.
Oh, always.
I know you better than that. Am I right?
You always tell your stories.
Okay.
Way too many.
He's a really fun person to sleep next to.
Well, I'm going to have to take your word for that.
So you're saying he has very vivid dreams. Is that what you're saying?
No.
Or he just jumps out of bed?
Does he talk to you like
when we're falling asleep?
I'm jealous.
He'll talk to me about stuff. And
I have to ask my husband 20 questions if I want to have a conversation.
Okay, so if he's talking to you, is he also writing these ideas down as he's
Do
telling
you have
you
a notebook them? Next to your bed?
No. I
Should you?
No, not for me. For me, my feeling is lots of ideas come and go for me, and not that it's bad. Lots of other authors do that. Mm-hmm. But for me, if the idea is good enough, it sticks around. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't stick around, then my feeling is that really wasn't such a good idea. But I will, and you know, sometimes she's like just about asleep, and it's like, oh, okay. There's an ending. There's a climax to book two.
Uh-huh.
And I said, okay, are you two? And she's like, no, go ahead. You know, and so I'm telling her, okay. So this happens, and then this, and then just as the reader gets to this point, suddenly, you know, and I'm like, tell me that is not cool. And she's like, no, that is so cool. You know?
So have you ever fallen asleep when he's telling you?
No.
I would imagine that would be difficult just because, you know, the whole time during dinner when he was first telling me about the Shanda Covington thing, and I was still so starstruck because of all the LDS authors that were there. Oh my gosh,
you know, it's really, really funny to me that
he keeps your attention.
That he's famous. It's funny to me. I was there when he signed his first autograph, and I was
really?
Yeah, that is just
that's a fun
so
story.
Weird.
Do you remember who it was?
It was actually Cutting Edge was coming out, and so we were going to the LDS Booksellers.
Oh, where you just were? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where I just was exactly. Yeah. And they had a breakfast before. I mean, we hadn't even. I don't think anyone had read the book yet. It was just going to be getting to stores. They were going to be ordering it. There was a really kind of fun movie interview that we were going to go see, but we hadn't been to that yet. And all the Siegel managers and stuff were at a breakfast at the Mayan with these authors. And so we're sitting there at the table, and this woman, you know, she was all, you know, all excited about Cutting Edge and everything. And she handed me this napkin and said, could you sign this for
I
me?
I love it, a napkin.
Are you like, okay?
Right.
Up to that point, his signature had only been valuable on checks.
There you go.
Well, not very valuable.
Here's a little question for you.
Yep.
Do you sign the same way you did that when you signed that first napkin, when you signed books and everything? Or has your autograph changed to that quick little...
No, it's still illegible.
Savage, it's the same. J. Scott Savage is a different signature that I
Right, but I mean, like, when you sign something, it's as always Jeff been a Savage, scribble.
If you, if you can read my Jeffrey S. Savage signature, see,
then
here's
one thing.
Fake.
Not the real thing.
I was in the Army, and in the Army, you have to sign for everything. I mean, you sign for every meal, you sign, you know, when you pick this up, you sign, when you drop that off and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it gets to the point, you know, where you just
scribble.
It's a scribble. You can see kind of a J and a little bit of an S. And
when I was lead teller at credit union, you had to sign everything too, and so it just ended up being like an S, a C, and a line.
Exactly,
you know, like,
right. Yeah, a little scribble.
You know? Yeah, so I just wondered if his, you know, after signing everything, if it had changed at all.
I think they're the same. Yeah, in fact, it's funny, I've seen occasionally books for sale that are on like half.com or things like that, and they'll say signed copy, and they'll try to discern, like, I have really common things, you know, like, good reading or best Jeff Savage or that kind of thing. And you see him trying to translate what it is. And it's like, yeah, that's not what it says.
That's funny. Well, do you have any other?
You know what? That's, you know, I asked so many questions when I gave interview.
A lot of it's on the blog.
You know what? The main thing that I want people to know is that they have to read this book just because because I've read a lot of fantasy and I just felt like this was a whole new world, not anything like any of the other worlds that I'd been to before. And that was what was exciting for me. Because if I can come and find a brand new world, new place to go, new characters, new creatures, that is exciting. And that gets my interest. And I know that the kids will like this. I know, like you said, this is a book for adults too. And I said that in my blog, you know, that it's not just for kids.
I'm sure I'll feel the same way when I finish that, because I felt the same way about James' book, The Journal of Curious Letters for the 13th Reality Series, that I've never read a story quite like that before.
Yeah.
And just because I am a science geek.
Yeah.
And, the, you know, the subject of the QP. And
yeah,
the,
exactly.
You know, it all just seems so, you know, plausible.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, you remember that Star Trek episode where Worf travels to all the different, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I totally just bared myself as a true geek there.
Jen
but,
and
you
I
know,
are huge Next Generation fans.
I absolutely.
We all
are Trekkies.
Yeah. The episode with Picard and they're doing the baryon sweep.
Yes.
Oh, yeah,
that's one of the best. Yes,
yeah. See,
we all of us here love them.
I'm in great
Star
company.
He was out of town, so I was like up late watching.
I watched Voyager. I watched Next Generation. No. But anyway, you know that's something that's always fascinated me. As and I like how they explained it in the book. And I was going to talk about this when James was here, but you know there was a lot going on. Was that the splits in the reality which you'll read about? Mm-hmm. You know the. And the earthquake explanation and just how the splits, you know, what has to happen in order for there to be the kind of split. But I wanted to ask him about the other realities he hadn't listed and everything, but I'm sure those will come up.
Exactly.
They will. But anyway, I just...
You see some other realities in book 2.
Okay. So. Just the whole thing, just the whole possibility of different, that mankind evolves a little differently in this one or this, or that, you know, the whole concept of that just speaks to the geek in me.
Yeah.
And so I think that these two books are...
They're both fabulous in their own sense.
And
I
really
did have one more question that you never answered me in our Q&A.
She thinks she's going to nail you down while you're here in person.
Well, no, I just was wondering.
Sorry, I got to leave now.
Yeah, goodbye. No. What do you call when they go from from Earth to far world? Because I said jumping, you know, because that was the only thing I could think of. But what do you call it?
I would call it jumping. I didn't want to do... There have been so many things, you know. Think about, like, Quantum Leap, you know, where
I
loved it's leaping.
That. Yes.
I love the series.
Exactly.
You know, or winking or different things. In this point... Yeah, let me see what I can say this without giving too much
sliding.
Away.
Sliding? I know. I love Sliders.
I loved that show.
I loved that one.
I didn't want to come up because... They don't know enough right now. I mean, honestly, what do they know? Well, what Kaija knows, there's some things. I mean, there's some rules that we've figured out. Okay.
Exactly.
Kaija can pull Marcus and she can push Marcus.
Mm-hmm.
And Marcus, if he's pushed, can pull her. But he, as far as we know, he can't go find her and get her.
Okay. Right, and we already know that neither one can last very long in the other's world at this point.
We do know why to some extent.
Right.
I'll give you one little hint again, just one of those little things where you're you know, I probably hadn't considered that a lot. We know about Far World.
Yes.
And we know about Earth. Where is this gray area?
The in-between.
The in-between. What is that? You know that.
Ew.
Yeah.
There's so much depth to this.
Is that like
there is? I mean, that's why
is
I
that
think
like the
books are going to be fairly big. But yeah, there's there's something to it. I will tell you, it's not something where I'm just randomly asking it, but I think there's a lot more. And like I said, there are certain things at the end of book two, you know, which I have not finished writing, but I finished writing it in my head. Okay. Mm-hmm. At the end of book two, if you don't just say, wow, I've got to read this series. I mean, for me, at least as a fantasy geek, the climax of book two is just, it's a great, powerful scene.
Jennifer's scream over here because she's like,
I'm just so excited.
And then, you know, I will say that book five, I'm excited about writing it. I'm a little bit nervous about being able to pull it off because it is something that I've never read. I've never seen done before. And so it'll be really fun to write. In fact,
I'm sure you'll find a way.
For me, it's a little bit, I mentioned the Neil, Gaiman. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, when you read him, you're like, wow, this is so different. And that's the thing in book five is
it's going to be different.
It's going to be different. Yeah, I'll put it that way.
See, that just makes me so excited. Now, when are the arcs coming out for book two?
5 more years.
It's like, when do I get my hands?
Probably May of next year.
Oh, you guys, that is like such a long
way. Well, it makes you, you know, you never really think ahead to like 2014. You know,
no.
Like we were talking about with Jessica.
Yeah, actually, Jessica, we just talked about that last month.
You get to know what you're doing in 2012 or,
yeah.
You know, if this comes out, it won't be until like, you know, 2014. Yeah. And
actually,
like,
what we were talking about was the end of the world. Is my book going to be able to be published before the end of the world?
Hopefully. Yeah, exactly. That would be really disappointing.
It would be disappointing. But I would imagine, you know, that somehow we'd still get to
be able to write and publish books.
Exactly.
I would hope so. Life should continue for the most part.
Yep. I mean,
is
there
anything good or lovely?
Or praiseworthy, or
yeah, you'd hate to think that you were given a talent that
it's late.
Was only good on this earth.
Well, you have it for a reason, you know. Yeah. Obviously, there are people who are better at music. We can't all be good at music.
Yep.
And there's got to be a place for stories in heaven. I mean,
Jesus was a storyteller.
Well, look at the scriptures. You know exactly.
Yep.
So there's a place.
I agree.
A place just for you.
There you go.
And you, because you're still going to need to, you know.
Absolutely.
So who do you think that he'll be able to, you know, celestially write?
Everything will come out.
I think we'll all be, like, it'll be on gold. Everyone will have gold plates of different stories. You know,
like, well, don't make me live in your horror world.
There you go.
Exactly.
So is book two going to be dedicated to Jennifer?
It might be. I've dedicated a couple of books to her.
Oh, you've already had your turn. Sorry.
I dedicated my first book to her. So.
That's good.
Awesome. Yeah.
I just don't remember who you did.
Because I'm so cool.
You are so cool. And it's been a pleasure having you on the
it's
podcast.
Been fun.
Thanks for coming to the table. I know you didn't want to.
It beats
but
the mint wrapper origami.
She is so talented. Speaking of talent, she made
a mint wrapper cootie catcher and a cup.
Yes, we have mint peppermint patties here, and she's been making some wonderful things here. We're very impressed.
Her cup actually does hold water. So
that is just cool.
I mean, I haven't tested it out yet, but
she's a multi-talented woman.
I know so many things.
I don't know... if we should talk any more about it, about the Far World, because we've already talked so much that I don't want to give anything more away. You have to go and read the book. I can't wait to finish it. I'm already, you know, liking what I've read so far.
You'll love
and
it.
Thanks for joining us again for
Thank
the
you.
Third time. It's been great having you. And I hope you always are willing to come back. You know,
oh,
you
absolutely.
Are big and
We're
famous.
Old buds.
Even when you're millionaires because your movie made, you know, box office smash, you know,
absolutely.
Lots of money. And that you remember us because it is always a pleasure to have you on.
Well,
we love
you know,
to have
you'll
you
have millions of podcast downloaders by then, you know, so we're just going to grow together.
So. Yeah, exactly.
That would be awesome.
That would be great, you know. And. It's been so much fun having you here tonight, eating cookies and munching on mint patties. And you know, when you talk to James again next time, just make sure that after he left, we were very nice to him.
And we didn't say anything bad. He can
and that we
listen.
Really did enjoy having him on
that
the podcast.
That we edited out all the bad stuff that we said.
and we can't wait to have you. We'd love to have you both on again, especially if you have, you know, if your Chandra Covington comes out next spring around the same time.
Whenever
as
you want something talked about, we're here.
If you don't mind. Unless you want the limelight all to yourself. We'll find a way to make it happen.
No, James and I are good buds. I mean, for all the... all the trash talking we do, you know, like he said, you know, we've really, it's nice to have someone that has similar goals and beliefs. I mean, like I said, when we first started 5 years ago, the ability, there are more people that make a living playing professional baseball in the U.S. than there are that make a living as novelists in the U.S.
That is so sad.
And
it's just sad.
But it's a reality.
I know it is, but it's still very sad.
But to have someone who you know, clear back when, you know, mm-hmm. we both said, hey, you know what? When someone's got to do it. Out, we're going to do it. Yeah.
Why not?
It,
why not me?
Exactly. And, and that's,
you're so smart.
It's been really nice.
Well,
to
and knowing
that.
You've been friends and then reading all of your work, you yeah. know, individually and seeing yeah. how you've each grown, it's been a lot of fun for us as readers as well. And to be able to have you on the podcast together was a lot of fun. I don't think we'll need to separate you next time.
Probably not.
You are both very well behaved, so.
We almost never hit.
Yeah, well,
we bruise,
I guess,
easily.
I guess. Well, we'll have make sure there's, you know, padding or.
There you go.
You
that
know.
Works. Okay.
Keep you far enough away just so you can't reach each other.
That works.
And we'll make sure there's no straws or paper for spitballs.
I was just joking about that.
Oh, we know you were.
Anyway, I spitballs too.
Yeah, watch the spitballs, exactly.
But I'm very good at breaking up really unruly
yes,
children.
Yes, we have the teacher at the table. She can, you know, excellent. We'll have you pull a card.
Well, I will tell you that James and Rob Wells both make guest appearances in the next Chandra book. So.
Do they?
I think
oh,
that
that's right, because they're the
hilarious.
They're the goofy cops, yeah.
I can't wait to read that. I'm really excited for the next Chandra Covington book.
Be
so.
A fun one.
All right, well, thank you so much for
Thanks.
Joining us for episode 27 of LDS Women's Book Review. I don't know what else to say because it's been just such a fun podcast. So I guess we'll just sign off here and join us next time. And congratulations to all the winners of our books.
Yes,
today.
To Jennifer, and Jennifer twice, and Claudia.
Exactly.
Thank you for commenting on the website.
Well, we'll catch you next month.
Bye.